At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Today on Lulz, we have our friend Alex Osimo Baker, or should we say Alex Stochastic Baker, joining us today to talk about Osimo's big rebrand, what he's been up to, and also a little best ball game theory. Alex, throwing a wrench, a grenade at us, week 17 bros. We're going to hash it out all today on Lulz. He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Alex Osimo Baker, welcome back to the show. When was the last time you were on? Everything blurs together for me.
What's up, guys? Yeah, good to be on the show. I can't remember, but you guys have been doing a lot of good for the industry, you know, fighting duplication and DFS tournaments and toxicity and League of Legends. So it's always an honor to be on here.
Technically, Brad, just duplication for us. Like, don't dupe us. You could dupe everyone else. That's fine. I just thought of something.
Yeah.
Did you squat on all? Did someone from the Osimo, formerly Osimo team, squat on all the stochastic usernames on DraftKings and everywhere else? You can't have like a new guy who's got the user tag stochastic going up the rankings and not be on the team.
Well, I mean, like, if there was someone who did that, I guess we'd have to hire them, because
that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny you say that, because we were just doing the Swolecast earlier and there was someone whose handle is Awesome Yo.
Yeah.
And he has your guys' logo, and I didn't like his takes. I was like, I don't think this is an Osimo approved take there. So he was masquerading with your takes.
Well, he's Mike Lawrence, and he actually he's been in the community a while. Like, I always saw him on like YouTube streams commenting and stuff. And then apparently, like, he's a producer, so like we actually work with him now, and he like produces a lot of our content.
There you go. Well, sorry for the shots fired. I'll also say, Alex, I think it was probably like a year or so ago, I decided to get like the blue blocker glasses, and I legit forget to wear them all the time, except when I see you on stream. So maybe I can, I remembered today, and now I can join you in the blue lock.
It's an honor, man. It's always good to be twinning. I see you got those headphones as well.
Yeah.
So now all I need is the backwards hat.
I know you're really slacking here. So you've got a lot going on with the big rebrand. You did your press release, you announced it, but have you actually talked like long form about it on a show or anywhere? I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything.
No, I mean, I've been on shows since then, and I mean, done the stochastic shows and stuff. I haven't like gone into detail about why we changed the name. I think we had an article on the site, and there's a little bit bits and pieces here and there. I think you kind of get the gist, and I think you guys were on the right track on your last show a couple weeks ago, kind of why like we might consider changing the name and why we did.
What is the feedback been since announcing this?
I think it's I think it caught everyone off guard, like, for the most part. And they're like, why would you do this? Like, you're on top of the game. But, like, we're really thinking, like, long-term here, just making sure that we're making smart moves for, like, the long-term of the company. And I think, like, the reason why we chose Osmo originally was because we were starting from zero. And, like, I built up some brand equity playing DFS and getting to number one on RotoGrinders. So it was a convenient name at the time. Like, since then, we've brought on, like, some really awesome DFS players, sports bettors, like, and a lot of people behind the scenes. So I think it was appropriate to have a name that kind of, like, encompasses everybody on the team. And we came up with Stochastic.
Feel like you guys should have done, you know how you know they'll have like the parking spot for employee of the month? It's like, what if every month you guys just put one of your contributors' names in a hat and then that was the name on the site? So it's like the Colts ship my money, and you just do a rebrand each month. I think that would,
like,
work.
It honestly isn't too far from the truth, because like in DFS, like, everyone's gonna have their hot months and down months, and like, we do have a lot of really good like players on the team. So like, there was a couple of months where like Sean Zahn was running like God, like, so we were like hyping up Sean on the shows. Ship My Money obviously has had some big wins. Like he really disheartened all the NHL bros when he won 100K at NHL when he doesn't even know hockey. So like, it's always some guy or another like having like the huge day, and it's cool that like we can all kind of be under this umbrella of Stochastic and hype up the guys that are the superstars of the day, you know?
He won 100K at PGA too, I think, and that's when I officially declared PGA 100% random chance, no skill at all.
Yeah, I think he like gets off on that too, like that he's like beating people at their own game. So I think that's like part of the fun in it. I mean, he's awesome at MLB, NBA, and football and stuff. But it's always fun. Like, to me, it's like, I always enjoy seeing people have success at some of the other sports, maybe outside of their comfort zone, because we all kind of want to branch out and try some of these new ones that we're not as familiar with. And, like, I think it's cool to see people, like, having success doing that.
So, I mean, the pushback that I saw with the name was mainly just that it was like a mouthful to say, that it didn't quite roll off the tongue. Brian was talking about how, and I think he's right, that kind of the process, especially if you use like an outside firm for coming up with names, kind of how intensive that is. Was this just a few of you guys sitting around spitballing, or were you guys using kind of an outsized like or outside marketing firm to help do this?
We did it all ourselves. I mean, we had a lot of discussions about what the name could be, and ultimately we decided on Stochastic for a variety of reasons. So that was kind of our process. It's just something that like all the guys on the team like felt good about.
It has to be something unique, I'm assuming, because you need to squat on all the social media, and you want it kind of unique for SEO and stuff like that.
Definitely. And I think one of the things that people like maybe didn't pick up on is that like when choosing a brand name, you want something that isn't overly specific. And like with Osmo, it's kind of like it had this association with DFS, but like we're not trying to just do DFS. Like we want to do sports betting, right? Like fantasy football, and like who knows what the next things that our company is going to venture into are. We don't even quite know. But like I'm excited, like, because like what if we wanted to do like a poker vertical or something, like that would totally fit under this umbrella.
Yeah, and Stochastic too kind of definitely fits with post poker. I mean I totally agree. We've talked offline before that I thought you should do this exact same thing. And even when you decide this, I'm assuming it probably took you like 6 months or a year to like get the whole thing rolling, where you're like, okay, we can finally switch it over and it's not going to break and we have everything logged. So I bet it took a while to do that. So I think Pete already said this, but yeah, so you're squelching it, all rumors that someone's trying to buy you or you sold a big piece or anything like that, or maybe someone's in works. What do you got, anything like that in the hopper?
I mean, the rumor mill was pretty amusing, to be honest. Like, my favorite rumor was that we were being sued by South Park about the name, But yeah, there was really no like immediate impetus to change the name. It was more of a long-term strategy.
I mean, because, and everyone knows, obviously, that was kind of directly tied with the name when you were first starting out. I mean, you were doing pretty much everything with the site, and specifically from, you know, a projection standpoint, modeling standpoint. Like, where are you at right now with kind of how you feel about DFS and even making that kind of content? Like, are you exhausted by the process when some random NASCAR slate comes around and you're like, fuck, gotta run my model again? Or do you get like the juices going? Like, do you get excited, you know, day in and day out kind of doing that stuff?
Yeah, I think it's it's funny because some of those random things like NASCAR, like Camping World Series, like I'm pretty sure that most people don't even know we cover that on the site, but like I'm out there like doing the projections like all the time for that. It's like it's at really inconvenient times and stuff, so like it is kind of a grind. Like more than getting burned out, I think it's like it's just the inconvenience of the timing of everything, where like now I'm married and like my wife Nina wants to do things, and it's like sorry honey, I can't hang out with you and your friends. I gotta update League of Legends, China League, you know.
Oh, go ahead, Brian.
I can't imagine that's any fun. Like, no. Especially if you're doing completely bottom up with projections and everything like that, like keeping those databases up to date. It's not fun. The more like computer skill you have or help you have, the easier it gets. But it's still not even fun then. So I know you got a question, but I'm interested in like how much have you kind of pawned off to other people right now? Like let's say Osmo starts day one, you're 100%. Let's just say it is. What are you now in your day-to-day stuff? And I'll just vouch for Sean and Steve. I've worked tons of hours with Steve by himself. He's sharp as hell. So what would your percentage be now?
Yeah, so like first I'll start with like some of the sports that I'm not involved with, I guess, where like I built an NHL model, but like I don't know NHL. So like we're fortunate that we brought on Jake Hari like pretty soon after founding the company. So like he had kind of a model, then we kind of worked together on a model, and that's where we're at now. And he like does all the updates for the most part. If he is on vacation or something, like he'll be like, Alex, like you need to update these days and stuff. So I like kind of work in a little bit. And then we have guys like Matt Gajewski. Like that guy is like, he's probably like the biggest MVP, like as far as projections, because he's doing like college football, college basketball, and USFL. Like doesn't get nearly enough credit, in my opinion, like for how like much he's doing behind the scenes. We got like, I'm not sure if you guys have ever like tried our soccer, but we got Giovanni Vidal like doing projections for that. Like I plugged in his projections. I won like 100K. It's crazy. So like, Matt Savoca is kind of like leading a lot of our best ball. Sean and Steve are definitely the core parts of our projections team as well. Where like with the bigger sports like NBA and MLB, they're kind of, we're kind of like 50-50, like between me doing it and Sean and Steve. So, I think like a lot of people have their hand in all these different sports.
Yeah. And so it sounds like your process with that kind of is ideally you kind of provide the guardrails or kind of the framework for the model, and then kind of trust and lean on more domain experts to make sure there's nothing glaring there, and then also fine tune them in a way that makes them even more valuable.
Definitely. Yeah. I think, it really depends on like how much domain expertise that our data and tools team, which is me, Sean, and Steve, like have in the sports, because I think like we know a ton about like NFL, NBA, MLB, like the big ones. And then like some of the smaller ones that like maybe we don't have as much time to devote to, then that's where we bring in like guys that really know those sports.
So what I was trying to tease out before, as you mentioned, obviously you're married, you're more busy, you're probably handling stuff on the business side. I guess I'm trying to understand if you did have, say you didn't have those things going on, would you like in your perfect world just spend your day doing everything you did to start this company, all of that, doing the projections, or are you actually excited to have that stuff off your plate to an extent?
That is a good question. Like I really enjoy the guys I'm working with, and like also like all the like modeling and stuff. The one thing that it's kind of causing like an existential crisis for me, to be honest, is that like I feel like a lot of my best work may be behind me, where like I built these models that like I know they're good because I've used them to win like a bunch of money, and then like we kind of like built the site up to this point. And I feel like a lot of like the biggest impact I've had is kind of like behind me, and I'm still trying to contribute all I can, but it's kind of like, damn, like it's kind of crazy because I'm like, have I peaked already? Like what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know what I mean?
You might have another business after this one, buddy. You never know. So with DFS, there's projections, and then there's a process you use to enter those lineups. Yeah. So two questions then. With all the new guys, and I kind of know this answer, but how you enter lineups, have you shared that with any of your coworkers? And two, since you're not playing as much, do you ever think about, oh, maybe we should add another tool that like you could here's how you should enter some lineups for a big field GPP?
We have some stuff in the works that will help people like build lineups in like an efficient way. Like one of the things I've been working on recently, like we have a big focus on trying to make it easier for casual players to build smart lineups. Like especially people that like to hand build or just enter like a few lineups, because like I feel like there's a lot of guys out there that they love fantasy sports, and I kind of feel like there's like enough sophisticated actors in the space where if you go at it solo without like expertise, you're gonna be at a big disadvantage. So we're just trying to get people up to that level where they can compete and make this a sustainable hobby and be on par with those sharks, so to speak. So kind of went on a tangent from the original question, but like
Your specific process. Are you gonna share it?
A lot of my process is like tied into the spreadsheets where we do the modeling. So like all those inputs that create a projection, like I'll also use for other purposes. So like some of the stuff like the top stacks is like an extension of our projections, where like we're running simulations to calculate the odds of different stuff happening. So I think that's kind of how it's set up for me right now, where like most of the work I'm doing on like the projections and the tools, like it feeds into my process, and there's like just a couple extra steps on top of that to come up with the lineups.
When I definitely know kind of, or I think you described it well, of that feeling like, hey, you accomplished a lot of this stuff and now wondering what can I do to top it. Is there, I assume there's also kind of, you know, how much work and how much time it went into becoming a domain expert here. So the hill for the next thing probably seems really steep, because I take it you're not someone who's just going to, you know, be a dilettante and kind of just hop in and do something. Like if you do something, it's going to be massive. So what are the things that are intriguing you now as kind of where you could see yourself really focusing your time and energy?
So like, I think with DFS, like I became like extremely specialized in this like intersection of like, I wasn't a data scientist, but I learned like the math and the science behind like building predictive models, and then the sports expertise, because I kind of like immersed myself completely in DFS 80 hours a week so that like I could compete. And I kind of like approached it like building my own models, because I felt like the models available at the time weren't gonna cut it. Like the situation has changed a lot since then. But like, yeah, I do feel like if I went outside of this intersection of sports and math, then like I don't think I'd have nearly an advantage I have in DFS. So that's definitely something that I've been thinking about.
Well, you mentioned, of course, the chess is okay 80 hours line. I mean, chess is okay talked about how he had gotten into some more like TradFi and, you know, crypto stuff. Like there has to be room to apply modeling and kind of that within different markets where there might even be much more upside financially, maybe not necessarily this specific market we're in right now, but in general, does that intrigue you at all to apply it to stuff like that?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, one of the markets that was especially intriguing was this new like sports NFT market. Like it hasn't turned out very well. So I learned my lesson that like, even if you have the domain expertise, it doesn't necessarily translate into profits, but I think it is really hard to predict what the next big thing is, because like when I was doing poker, like I didn't even know what DFS was. And then people were like, DFS is the big thing. Like I'm quitting poker to do this. And like these guys making crazy money playing DFS. I didn't know about that like until like a couple of years before I started playing. So it's like you got to just be in the right situation at the right time to jump on as it happens. I don't know about anything right now that's especially appealing. I guess like the DeFi, like it's funny, like a couple of years ago, maybe that was the trendy thing. Now it feels like we've kind of like gone over the hump almost. So I'm not sure what to make of that.
Where are you at with that stuff, Brian? Do you still like when you fire up your models for X random slate? I mean, I'm guessing for you, you view it all through the lens of like, this is my job and I'm showing up to work and I'm doing my job for today. Or do you still get excited? Even is there any hobby element or fun element, or is it just procedural for you at this point?
It's pretty much procedural. Like yesterday with like the Millie to first and MLB is like, oh, this one could be interesting. I'd like to get lucky today, but, I'm doing a best ball sim, and I started in MLB. MLB. I started in Excel, and I'm switching over to R. And my R skills are not great, so it's like a learning experience. And it's actually kind of fun. So, yeah, but it's not. That's what I was saying. Like with the database and stuff for projections, like boring. That it was fun back in the day. Years ago, I liked coming up with stuff. Coming up with like sim ideas is kind of is fun, and like the strategy behind, like, okay, how can I win here? That stuff's fun.
Yeah, I feel like DFS has gotten a little stagnant, and that like the contests we're playing today are still like the same ones we were playing like 5 years ago. So maybe that kind of contributes to it, where like you kind of already have your model for everything, and then like it's a little bit less exciting, like trying to just like grind out like small enhancements to that.
Right. And there's probably this element of like, okay, you're doing modeling and stuff, so you're going to be at the top as far as how people are approaching this game. But as projections, content, tools, everything, it's like the gap is getting closer. And it's like for you guys, and this is the same for like an Olympic runner too, right? For them to shave, you know, 2 or 3 seconds off their time is like infinitely harder than for me to like shave off 2 minutes off my time. So I assume it just feels like the gap is always getting closer to you compared to you being able to separate from the field.
Well, I have a very unique perspective on this, because I used to play poker, and like I feel like poker is in a much more advanced state, at least when I like it's even more advanced than when I quit. But like even at that stage, it was like 10 years into the game, where DFS I think is more like 7 or something. But like what happened, you're right that like there's a group of people that are getting sharper and sharper, but there's also like a group of people approaching it the same way they always have, where they don't even use any like tools. They just go on their phone and they're drafting. So it's like the like sharp players are like getting even more and more advantages over this average Joe. While it's really the population size of that group that affects like the viability of like making a profit in DFS. I also think that maybe the sites kind of are aware of this dynamic, and they try to structure the game in a way that is most favorable to this group of players that may be like the most novice. So in poker, what happened is you had these kind of low edge games, but they were like raked a lot lower. So like on some tournaments, you're paying like 1% rake, where like some tournaments would be like 10%. So like we haven't seen that happen in DFS, where the rake has had to like come down to like justify the viability of the game. But I definitely see that as a possible way that this industry could develop.
You know, I bet my guess is behind the scenes, they're handing out vouchers and DK bucks and stuff to specific people to kind of keep that ecosystem going. But it is like the smaller that pool gets, like you just can't beat the rake. Like there'll probably always be, just like sports betting, just guys who just want to bet on the Bears, and they're going to do so every once in a while. There's probably going to be guys who just play DFS every now and again. It'll always happen. But if that pool gets below where a good player can beat the rake, all kind of screwed at that point.
How do you think about it? Because I think about this a lot from a content perspective and why I have a hard time becoming a thread bro and a TikTok bro. It's like we all know how to play that game. But I also think about, I guess how I'm phrasing this for you specifically is like, the quickest way to get people over to stochastic or whatever is through, you know, whatever it is, player takes, stuff that actually isn't as important to being a successful DFS player, but then keeping them, you got to teach them how to fish and you got to have the tools and you got to really show them what goes into this. How do you like balance that idea of like the best marketing for our site might not be what we ultimately are trying to get them to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's like been an issue we've been talking about a lot recently, because I think like you're spot on that like a lot of guys, like no one when they like start playing DraftKings is like, I love projections, I'm going to play fantasy football, right? It's yeah. Like you learn how to use projections because you want to succeed at fantasy football. Like, but it is a little bit of a challenge to convince people to use projections that aren't using projections, because like they enjoy playing the way that they play, and like we're trying to figure out the best way to like enhance everyone's experience in DFS regardless of how they play. And I think like we've done a lot of surveys where like people are like, you guys focus too much on like the like high dollar like super max players and stuff, and like we're really trying to figure out the best way to kind of have a site that's like really enhancing the experience of everyone.
When sports betting was going to be a thing, and in your head you're like, okay, this is going to do X for us, right? On a scale of 1 to 10, how'd that turn out so far? Like sports betting for your company, like compared to your original idea, like, we're going to make a ton of money. We're going to get, or like, yeah, well, maybe we'll dabble in it. I don't know what your expectations were, but like compared to your expectations so far, how's sports been treating stochastic?
Yeah, I mean, like, to be honest, oh damn, R. Kelly was sentenced to 30 years in prison. Anyway, the way I see it is like DFS is sports betting. Like, so like, I don't necessarily draw like such a distinction between the two. But like in typical like customer to like sportsbook products, like we've kind of seen a lot of growth recently in like success in that area. So it's been encouraging. I would say like the process of like having authority in the DFS arena to like transferring that to sports betting was like more challenging than anticipated. But I think we're on the right track.
And also might be like they might not pay as much as you thought too, you know, like with the referrals. And because I think even with the referrals that's currently set up in this kind of boom market, still wasn't as good as poker in the boom market. They had because you would get a piece, or even DFS in the beginning where you would get like a percentage of all their play, and that's just a ton more money, especially if you land some whales, and you guys certainly would.
Yeah, we missed out on the Roto Grinders golden age of being a DFS provider.
Yeah, sports betting went right to referral program, because like they knew like the competition wasn't going to be there.
Like the biggest like challenge of sports betting referrals is kind of logistical, because like they don't make it easy to sign up for these sports books. Like I remember like last Christmas, my mother-in-law like was like, yeah, I want to bet on the Super Bowl or something, or maybe it's like February or whatever, and she's like, I want to bet on the Super Bowl. So like I sent her an affiliate link, like we went through the process. She like filled out all the forms. She gets to the deposit page and she tries all of her credit cards, and none of them, they're all declined. So it's like there are some barriers that like you might not even think of to like actually getting in the game that like there's a lot of friction between like wanting to sports bet and then actually like signing up and then getting people to use your link. So there's a lot of challenges there.
Yeah. Well, and that
Bitcoin fixes this. No,
it fixes everything. Well, that goes back to that same idea of like the type of customers you're marketing to, right? Because, you know, sports betting affiliate links, you're dine and dashing those, right? You're like giving them an offer. Maybe you have a bet promo that they're going to come tail on one side, but like, are you really pulling them into your ecosystem? Whereas if you bring someone in from the DFS side and they're like, whoa, this tool is sick, this Top Fighters tool or whatever. And now it's like, oh, and now I can go do this for MLB too. Top Stack tool. Like you're creating different kinds of power users. And it's what I think about a lot too. And why I appreciate like so many of the people in my Discord. It's like, we like games, we like puzzles, we like game theory, and everyone's kind of approaching it from this almost obsessive personality, and you don't have a lot of the flybys, which means you don't have as big of an audience, you don't have as big of, you know, followings as other people, but fuck, they're a really good audience, and they're great people to be able to interact with every day.
Definitely, yeah. I think, like, there are a lot of I'm updating some MLB stuff. There's a lot of like really avid fantasy players, and like obviously like they're like the bread and butter of our community, like where they're really the foundation. But like the number of these players is like kind of small in the overall scheme of things. Like I wrote this strategy guide for MLB, and in the process I was kind of looking at the demographics of the player pools, and one I was looking at is that big $15 on DraftKings where everyone's trying to win 50k or 100k, and like on average there's only like 50 guys max entering this contest, and then only 50 more like MMEing it. So there were like 4,000 users, only 5% were like MMEing. It's like a lot of people just entering in a couple lineups.
Yeah. Are you guys both, Brian, are you updating MLB stuff too?
Oh, no, the early slate is done, I think, and I didn't do the 3 p.m. He's probably doing 3 p.m. stuff. I don't know. Or unless you're getting ready for 6 p.m.
I just saw some notifications on my phone. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm asleep at the wheel.
By that, you mean your R. Kelly notifications, right?
Yeah, that was a... Do we need to talk about this? It feels like the audience is probably like wanting our reactions to that.
Yeah, I've been monitoring the chat, and nothing on R. Kelly. There was a battle about XRP that broke out in the chat just because of one single Bitcoin reference. So that's just how it goes around here. I want to dig in. I know we got about 20 more minutes here. I want to dig into some best ball stuff because I know you guys have started to do some more best ball content. This was kind of the first piece I had seen from you where it seemed like you devoted some kind of serious attention and thought. First of all, just tell me, was this kind of like capitulation on your part? Like, these guys won't fucking stop talking about best ball. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. Was this a puzzle that you were excited to solve independently? What kind of brought you down the best ball research rabbit hole?
So the funny thing is, I actually wrote this article like a year ago and just no one saw it. So now when I posted it, like I refreshed it for 2022. And now everyone's like, oh, this article is dope. Like, I'm like, damn, what did I do wrong last time? But yeah, it's like we were like, we want to do best ball. And so like I kind of dedicated myself to like figuring out the best strategies for the game. And Steve Buzzard at the time, like was like he used to work at Football Guys, and he has a ton of experience in fantasy football, and he really got my wheels turning because he wrote this article about how you should weight different weeks differently for your regular season fantasy leagues. So mm-hmm. I'm like, we want to solve this for best ball. So I came up with some different simulations to try to make some rough estimates of like the best strategies in best ball. And it was I didn't really know what the results were. And I guess underdog was interesting because like, you'd think like one fancy point in the playoffs would be worth a lot more than one fancy point in the regular season, but it's only like two to four times as much because like you have a lot more like points in the regular season, but it's just that the margin of victory compared to those points isn't like linearly scaled to that. So like, even though there's like 1500 points potentially in the regular season, like margin of victory on average might be like 50, where compared to 1 week in playoffs, like you might have like somewhat similar margin of victory, but obviously a lot less fantasy points.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the question, would you describe when you do these points per dollar, would you say this is how you would think about maximizing ROI versus maximizing EV? Do you think those are one and the same? Like, how are you thinking about that through this lens?
So I think, I think a lot of people are zoned in on week 17 for like, that was kind of the evolution is like, okay, at first people were picking the best players and people were like, we got to win in week 17. But like, we know you got to win. It's like a parlay. You got to win every week, including the regular season. So like, it's kind of balancing all these factors, to be honest. Like, it comes down a lot to just picking the best plays more than like optimizing for the playoffs, because the difference in projection for a player in a playoff week versus a regular week might not be that different, except in extreme circumstances, like going into Green Bay in December or something, or just somewhere with really bad weather. So I think it's like really interesting to look at. And then like, there are some small adjustments that we make on our rankings, and those can have a big impact. But in general, I think that maybe focusing in on 1 week too much, it can be a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with that, right? Like, I've seen the drafts where it's just people are reaching and they're overcorrelating just everything. And it's like, it does seem like you're giving up too much. Although I would ask you, Alex, because like, I know you're not getting out of bed for anything less than $1 million here. That's not making it move for you. And so I understand if you say to me, Peter, if you're trying to maximize your ROI in this contest, you might want to focus a little bit more on week 16. But what if I said, Alex, all I give a fuck about is winning $1 million or plus. I want to finish first or second. That's my only goal. Is it still make sense to optimize more for week 16 than week 17 through that lens?
So I think that these are multiplicative to some extent, because if you have a higher chance of advancing, like based on these metrics, then like the that column that's like points per dollar times like the percentage of the time you get there is going to be higher. Like, so like these effects are kind of multiplicative between the different outcomes. So like, if you have a really good week 16 team, you're going to get to week 17 more, and that's going to improve your results. I probably wouldn't do some mega stack in week 16, just because like, you're definitely not going to be stacked in week 17 then. But like, one of the things that makes basketball interesting is like, the line of construction approaches like more and more similar territory, like the farther in you get, where like there are certain players that are going to win your league in week 16 and everyone's going to advance with those players. So like, I think that is a big factor where you need to have like a guy in week 17 that didn't get you there that comes through for you to win it.
Right. Which would almost say to me too, partly why I am okay focusing on week 17, of knowing like, yes, it's less likely I'm going to squeak these guys through, but you're often going to end up with, if you're optimizing for that week, say someone optimizes for week 16, they probably don't have some of the same week 17 correlations that you have. So you kind of get the double bonus of, yeah, it's harder to get there, but you would be unique theoretically when you did get there.
How far are you pushing this, Alex? Let's say you're doing an underdog draft. You're around pick 50, let's say. How far are you dropping down on an ADP, your ADP, whatever, just an ADP to throw in that correlation week 17 with the QB or something like that? Would you go down to 60, 70, 80? Honestly, because I mean, obviously – this is what sharp players do, but we have to be realistic. Like, trying to win a GPP 17 weeks from now, 450 man one, is really, really hard and a lot of luck. So like, how, like, what would you, let's say you're around the 50th pick, how far are you dropping down to get that perfect correlation that you want?
So I think, like, in general, like, if you really want a player, you draft them around before their ADP. But, like, I think there's two things. Like, the game stack where you're stacking the opposing players to your quarterback or you're exposing stack, I feel like that is a little bit overrated, possibly, where, like, the correlation between one team's success and the other teams in football isn't that high. And if other people like have this stack as well, then like I just like obviously the quarterback plus receiver stack has a lot more correlation than quarterback plus opposing players. So I'm really going for those stacks and not as much the game stacks personally, but I don't think
you're just like one round. You'd go down one round for that QB wide receiver.
I would, because like sometimes like if you don't get that pick, your draft is kind of screwed. Like if you like draft two of the same team without the quarterback, for instance, and then you miss out on that quarterback, then that really narrows your path of victory, because if those guys have big weeks, other people are going to have that stack and you won't. So then you're kind of screwed.
And one thing I've noticed too, just from doing these, is I think the temptation, people want the premium correlations in the premium stack. So they're often reaching early in their drafts to do that, where there is the most opportunity cost. But then what happens is, okay, say you get your perfect, you know, Chargers Rams stack through five rounds, you got Kupp, Mike Williams, Keenan, Akers, Allen Robinson. It's like now you're heading into the late rounds and you actually don't have hardly any other options for correlation. I find when I go 10 rounds, and maybe I just have a couple, then it's like, it's almost impossible for me to not have correlations at ADP the rest of the draft, because I have seven or eight teams going. I can pick to double down on a team, like you said. And that's been something I've been focusing on, where I've been more, because I think while the bring back correlations are fun and sexy, it's like you almost have two outs to just betting on a team, because you can have them, if they blow the team out 40-10, you want to be on that side. Or if it's a shootout 40-40 or whatever, you're probably going to get a big score from those guys as well. So I just think if you're a little patient with the correlations, like the board just completely opens up for you in the back half of the draft.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think having some late round stacks that you like is kind of a nice thing to plan around. Like last year I ended up with a lot of like Derek Carr, because I liked Hunter Renfrow as a pick. So then you kind of like, if you like sometimes getting, I don't know if I'd plan my draft around this, but like sometimes you get that skill player that early in the draft that the quarterback's late in the draft. And that's just kind of like a natural like way to draft that's pretty productive. So just having one early round stack, one middle round, and one late round stack, like can be a good strategy. But like, obviously, with a game as dynamic as basketball, like, you can't plan too far ahead.
So, intuitively, ahead. I think, like, a run back is a good, like, tiebreaker. If you have, like, the exact same ADP on a guy, it's a good tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of this stuff really is just tiebreakers for me. But the wide receiver, maybe stud tight end, QB, I'd probably be willing to force that. And multiple wide receivers from – or catchers from the same QB team – I think there might be like a double bonus. Like if they really have a good season, like that team's really likely to make it to the playoffs. Plus you get the correlation in the playoffs and stuff like that. But you could test this in a sim, right? Like you could adjust their ADP artificially and then see like, okay, how bad did this do and how good did it do and how much did the correlation matter and just all sorts of things like that. So you could actually find out, but I don't think you want to, because then all the week 17 marketing for basketball world is gonna get shot probably.
A couple other things I do want to touch on here, and Leonie in the chat asking how are you accounting for season-long injuries in the sims, and this was something I was thinking about too, where so much in fantasy football and best ball specifically are these contingent players, where it's like you can look at Alexander Madison's median projection and it's going to be pretty poor because you're going to assume, you know, Dalvin Cook's going to play mostly a full season. But in those games where he's out, he averages 18 points a game. And so I imagine that is very hard to quantify and model. So I guess, with Leonie's question, how do you think about that?
So I think one way to think about it is the injury rate by position, where running backs get injured at a much higher rate than quarterbacks, for instance. So like it's kind of like balancing the different positions a little bit, because running back usually is that one that you're drafting first, but it's also the one that can bite you the most with injuries. But I think with the players that are handcuffs, like this is the one where I feel like you can fall into a lot of pitfalls, because like there's guys that you think are handcuffs that the guy gets injured and then they don't get the playing time. So you got to be damn sure that the guy is actually going to be a workhorse when they do get the opportunities. Alexander Mattison is a good example, but like I remember like in past years, people are like, oh, this guy's the backup to Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey gets injured, and then it's like some other guy. So. then you're just like, you're drawing dead from the start, and you didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
Accounting for injuries in a sim is pretty easy. I'm sure Leone knows this, but like you could easily do it. You just have to guess. Like Christian McCaffrey, what's his injury rate this year? What would you guess, Pete? Honestly, like mate, what would your number be? Say like 3 weeks or longer.
13 to 15%. I'll say 15% injury rate for McCaffrey.
Like more than 3 weeks.
Yeah.
What would you guess, Alex? Or do you not believe in that? Do you think it's just random?
I think 13 to 15% is a reasonable estimate. I think that like people overestimate the chance they'll get injured again.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. In my head, I was thinking like 25%, but that sounds too high. But like, it shouldn't change your mean projections anyways in a sim. Like you should still leave your mean project. This is how I'm going to do it. And you leave your mean projections and then just have some sort of random injury role in your sim. And so like probably like length of time, and it could happen each week. So like, you know, gets hurt for, rolls hurt 2 weeks, zeros. And so like your mean in the sim will actually be lower than what you'd show on your site. But that doesn't matter in this, in football. That's not the same thing in some other sports.
Yeah. Cause the other thing I've been thinking about a lot too, is just like when and how, you know, you're getting this production. And kind of one of my thesis is that, you know, the ADP on Underdog specifically is so efficient, but it's efficient in a way at pricing production for the entire season, and various production, specifically production at the beginning of the season. Russell Gage's ADP screaming up right now. That's not as important to me, but you're paying a premium for it in the market because they're looking at it over the course of the whole season. Whereas I find myself looking at the weeks 15 through 17, where is this production I could get at a discount? You know, our zero RB team that finished top 10 last year. I mean, Sony Michel and Rashad Penny did nothing for our team the first 10, 12 weeks of the season, and yet were these absolute late season hammers. And so I'm also thinking that, like, how do you think through that from a modeling perspective? These guys who are suspended, injured, traditionally break out later, because they do bring so much more value than a typical player you're projecting for the whole season.
I think Rashad Penny is like an interesting example, because I'm pretty sure that was a guy that it would have been really hard to land on, like in a best ball draft last year, because like, I don't remember exactly what the Seahawks depth chart was, but like Chris Carson was high on it. Then I feel like Rashad Penny was like several people down in the depth chart. So like, it does kind of beg the question, like, are people underdrafting some of these like really long shot players, where maybe Rashad Penny was only in like a few percentage of best ball drafts like taken. So that's kind of the tricky parts in my experience, especially like early in the season, where maybe you draft the handcuff and then they get cut before the season even starts, like, because it's just really hard to tell what the depth chart is going to look like for a lot of teams.
And this is where I do think it's fun when you want to get into there's places to get your player take hat on. And I mean, the end of the draft, there were, as Leone says, there were people who were very excited about Rashad Penny. I mean, RotoViz has been pounding the drum for Rashad Penny for a long time. So I think that is where you can really kind of dust off like, hey, I do think I might have a player eval thing, where if the depth chart opens up, I think this guy's just the better guy who had earned touches. But it is an interesting thought experiment. And I also wanted to bring... Oh, go ahead.
So, like, Rashard Penny, like, even Rotoviz, I don't know. I'm making this up. I bet their projection for him pre-2001 season was probably pretty fucking low. Before... And they might say, like, this guy's an outbreak candidate, but I doubt they projected him for, like, 240 fantasy points for a season. You know? But I get what you're saying. I just kind of think people misunderstand Sims. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like probabilities and things like they don't understand. It seems like that's happening in Sims lately. And so, like, yes, you can have a bottom-up sim in DFS where you enter all your lineups from this process specifically. So it's easier in DFS because, one, there's no draft. That's huge, right? I could enter whatever I want. You have a ton of information that day. But Sims, even if you – so, like, here's what I'm saying. Hearing people say all the time, like, well, what about the injuries? What about the backups? How are you accounting for this? How are you accounting for that? Which is all granted. Like, you want to put the most work you can into your sim. But you could still glean a ton of strategy from just doing a basic, you know, level one sim if you're smart about it and figuring out like what means what and stuff like that. And so you could go like, okay, I have a lot. I showed you one of my early ones, Pete, like I had a lot of advancement rate for Christian McCaffrey. And your first thought is, well, he gets injured. So that's probably too high. It's like, well, yes. So like, you know, when you're drafting that that's probably a little high. You could like go manly it, lower it, because clearly if the guy's going to get injured 25% of the time, that median projection's wrong. He's not going to happen a lot. You could even take him off your board completely, but you still learn a lot of like what positions are advancing, like whatever, whose ADPs are off based off of these numbers. How much does correlation matter? Because it doesn't matter if you're just doing things like correlation and advancement rate, it could be made up names and numbers. And you could just be, okay, like what point projection to ADP matters? What correlation matters? What happens in the postseason? You don't even need, and then here comes the porn bots in the middle of my speech.
They heard the sim, the best ball sim. They're talk, like, they come right out of the woodwork.
They heard that speech and they're like, oh, virgin alert. There must be a bunch of virgins in there. This dork's talking.
Well, I think to the other reason, Brian, and I actually want to tie this into the three quarterback stuff that you wrote about as well, specifically because I think what was so interesting about your piece was kind of, and you could say it's like retrofitted in a small sample size the first 2 years of Best Ball Mania, but the three QBs, so like a lot of the best like finals and semifinals advance rates were two quarterback builds. And so some of this stuff, which is interesting of, you know, I'm curious too, where you would think about like, obviously forecasting via Sims versus using the data we have, like what's more reliable, because we are still working with such a small sample size there.
Yeah. I think like, it's just like DFS where like, if you look at the last slate and look at what lineup won,
yeah,
like that doesn't tell you much about what the best strategy is. And, in best ball, like the length of a slate is very long. So that doesn't necessarily tell you more information. It just means like you have less data. So that's where like doing some simulations like we did like for each position to figure out how many points they're adding over the course of a season can really help you come up with a concrete number on how to value some different players.
Yeah. And the thing I mean, I definitely build way more two quarterback builds specifically when I've, you know, and you reference this in your article as well, like where you spend your draft capital is going to inform what you do later. But to me, again, thinking through that final week from like a DFS lens or a single week lens, it's like, I can only start one quarterback and I'm going to need to be like near perfect to take this down. I don't want to use three spots on only one starting spot in my lineup. I'd rather have that bullet that can find its way into my flex and stuff. So it did make sense to me that three quarterbacks would help you advance more and that they're going to always provide more points over, you know, some of these super fringe running backs and wide receivers. But how do you think about that? Like, my guess is if I said you get to build your best ball roster for week 17 when we got there, you might even just put one quarterback on it, a low-owned one, but you probably wouldn't want to be using three quarterbacks to kind of win that tournament at that spot.
Well, I think that's where the format comes into play, where like I feel like the ownership of certain quarterbacks in week 17 is going to be very high.
Yeah.
Because it's like those stacks that get you there. So like if Patrick Mahomes gets 40 points week 16, like most of the lineups in week 17 are going to have them. That's why having Ben Roethlisberger, like it's fun, like he's retired obviously now, but like Ben Roethlisberger could be that week 17 quarterback that gets 40 points. It's happened before. And if everyone has on Mahomes because he got you there, then that has huge potential.
Yeah, so you're kind of saying you'd be willing to sacrifice maybe a structural kind of benefit in using that extra roster spot somewhere else, knowing that your third QB is likely going to be more unique than the one to two quarterbacks that propelled everyone there.
Exactly. Yeah, you're going to have definitely you're going to have a guy that very few people in the tournament are going to still have, because like that third quarterback that didn't contribute at all in weeks 15 and 16, like most people are going to advance with him.
So how do you think about then? So, you know, like say you take two of the elite quarterbacks, let's say you grab Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts around the 6-7, like based on what you did, do you still think it's worth tacking on a third quarterback in those situations? Or are you saying, hey, when you don't end up with a couple of the good guys, you know, use this as permission to get to three quarterbacks?
I think it's always like a pretty good idea. Obviously it depends if there's anyone else that you like late in the draft, but if I have the choice between a quarterback that I know is starting the whole season and a running back that's like maybe second on the depth chart, maybe third, but who's counting, you know, maybe the running back has more upside, but like the quarterback does have a lot of upside despite that. So, actually, I got to jump over to the deeper dive here in a few minutes.
But. We really appreciate you swinging by. This was fun. Thank you for joining all of us best ball bros. It is great to have you delivering thought leadership in the space.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, bud.
It's always right, awesome jumping on with you guys. And catch you guys next time.
Sounds later, good. We'll talk to you later.
All right, later.
So back to the Sims really quick.
Yeah.
Another huge difference here between DFS and best ball is you have to hand build. You have no choice. You have to be there in a draft and then somebody's going to snipe you, blah, 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 blah. So like doing the greatest best ball sim in the world. Although, I mean, these guys work for companies, like they should be doing that, but you could still get a lot of information out of a sim. But bottom line is you're going to have to get in there and hand build. But like I said, you could do it even without real names and still get a lot of information out of it. And when you're hand building and you got like a handcuff or someone who's injury prone that you think's injury prone, like you're going to be modifying as you go anyways. And you just kind of have like guidelines in your head, tiebreakers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean, I've been cracking my head trying to think like, okay, how can I automate this more? I don't think there's any way. You got to hand build in best ball.
Yeah, that's why we love it. All you automation bros, you know, stay out of our safe space with our beautiful hands and our I know better selections. I mean, I do think for me, what I'm most excited about for Sims with best ball is from the structural standpoints. And that's why that third quarterback thing is so where it's like, you know, what are we missing from where points traditionally come from? And what are the kind of structures that are viable? And I see Galaxy Brain conversation on Twitter all the time. Why not a 4 QB build? Why not a 4 tight end build? Like these are the kind of things that I don't think my brain is smart enough to know. And you need to see Sims to actually show, can these points actually get you there?
And Leone's point is well taken. He's right. Like what you just said would be shit advice if your sim sucks. Because like if you don't have the right ingredients in there, you're pumping out garbage and then people are basing their stuff off it. Like, oh, you need 4 quarterbacks. It's like, oh no, because he didn't account for X, Y, and Z. Like maybe, you know, like in his sim, he has like sometimes people don't take quarterbacks at like a way high level than is normal or something. And it's like, oh, okay, taking quarterbacks is really good strategy here, you know, whatever. Like there's a bunch of ways to screw it up. And, but like, I think a lot of the concerns are like guys, it's hand building anyways. Like you just get your sim to try to answer a few questions you have, like how much does week 16 and 17 happen? How much does correlation matter? How much does ADP matter? Right? Like if you, cause like I said, use fake names and fake numbers and you could be like, oh, okay, well, if a guy who's, you know, projected to score 20 points a week drops two rounds, like you got to take him above the correlated play or something, you know, whatever. You can have all these rules of thumb that then you go and memorize and use when you're hand building live drafting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is fun because there are, I mean, you're blending so many elements. It is such an insane puzzle to try to solve. And I also get it from Alex's perspective of like, Alex isn't grinding, you know, running back prospect profiles and, you know, what metrics have been normally predictive for, you know, breakouts and stuff. So it's like all those late round picks are just like a wash to him in a lot of ways. And I can see why, you know, trusting the Sims on like a three quarterback build in that situation would make sense for him. I also think you can play to your strengths. Like if you do feel like you can, you know, out select your opponents in the 17th and 18th round. And then to his point, one thing that I do think specifically aligns well to his three quarterback thing, and I still won't take three quarterbacks if I get a couple of good ones, but you get the double bonus because a lot of the good third quarterbacks are these rookies, are these guys that aren't getting drafted in a lot of these drafts. So they're already inherently going to be unique because they're not getting selected in every draft. And then on top of that, you know, they would help you be unique too, just with a unique stack once you get there. So I don't know. I think that's I definitely think that's interesting in three quarterback builds.
Yeah. I was thinking about the last week. 17 is like 470 players this week.
Yeah.
That's bigger. It's still pretty small in DFS. The DFS world, like I consider that a small size tournament,
right?
And like in small size DFS tournaments, you don't need to get that crazy. Mm-hmm. Like this, my Sims tell me, anyways, it's like way less crazier than a 30,000 man field.
Yeah,
way way less crazier. So like, there's a give and take. I think there might be a little overthinking here, honestly.
Well, and I think the edges probably in general are so small. And so then you find an edge and people probably push it too far is probably, but then you also don't want to just shrug your shoulders and say like, I don't know, just grab whoever is like at the top of the ADP and just hope you get lucky. Like you do want to explore like where are these edges, whether it's structurally with the players you're selecting, with the correlations you're focusing on, like, it's to me, the way I've been thinking of them is like, I know these are all like tiebreaker in bonuses for me. Oh, this guy slipped 15 picks past ADP. That's a bonus. I want that. Oh, this guy has a bring back to my week 15. Yeah. That's a bonus. Like, so it's like kind of picking and choosing, but not getting like laser focused on like what specific bonus I want. Cause then there's diminishing returns.
I think that's an excellent strategy. I wasn't pointing out anyone specifically overthinking. No. I'm just saying like when you are hand building, you're going to make a lot of these decisions.
Yeah.
Through your draft. So, I mean that what I want is somebody to tell me exactly what to do. Cause I don't want to think. Right. And so that's why I'm building mine to kind of give me a number. Like this is what you want this guy at. And then and then every couple weeks or whatever, as news comes in and changes and their ADP changes, update that. Maybe it goes down, maybe it goes up.
Yeah.
And then with all these correlations and stuff like that.
And I could just one little thing to end on and just to kind of show, you know, I know I'm the guy that made the video week 17 is all that matters, but showing you the point to which I'm not forcing it. I did this draft today. I didn't get one of the Chargers wide receivers, but then Justin Herbert fell and I had already had Cooper Kupp. So I thought, you know, I am focusing on this game. I don't have a Charger yet. No problem. There's some later. I notice, you know, Josh Palmer goes off the board like 30 picks ahead of ADP. Spiller, the other Chargers running back, goes ahead 15. I stay patient. I do get Gerald Everett. And then I'm sitting here thinking like, all right, I would like to double stack Justin Herbert, but I have this zero RB team where I'm rocked up at wide receiver. And I'm like, what does Jalen Guyton do for this team? Like at best, this kind of cardio runner guy's maybe going to get loose for like a deep ball once, but I decided to just make the bet. You know what? I'm going to take Will Fuller. I think he has much higher upside. I end up with just a skinny stack on Justin Herbert, but it was like, I'm not going to kill kind of my structure and what I think is optimal for this team just so I can say I have a Justin Herbert double stack.
Right.
And so that's kind of the thought process I'm going through of like when it lines up. Like if Josh Palmer fell to me within like 10 picks of ADP, I would have taken it. But he went so far ahead. So it's like, I'm not going to just fucking take Jalen Guyton for that reason.
Yeah, that's another thing a sim could tell you is, okay, Guyton and Herbert, like how much does that really help you compared to Allen's still there, right? Keenan Allen?
Yeah.
Compared to a number one like that, like you might want to reach a little bit for Allen and not take Guyton at all. You know, like it would probably tell you, it could probably tell you exactly what you're supposed to do. And then you could go like, oh, but what about all the injuries? What about all the injuries and whatever else? It's like, yeah, but like, this is probably right. Like this is something you could plug in fake names and fake numbers and it'll tell you.
I also think, tell me just talking out because Nick is, you know, and I agree with him. Sometimes a skinny stack is all you need. Help me think through this. Cause I'm thinking of it from the uniqueness perspective of like, say the team, like last year, the Bengals were a good example where it was like, you know, Ja'Marr Chase went off, then T Higgins went off and Joe Burrow was going off every week. And there were so many teams that had Higgins in Burrow specifically in the finals versus like, if you've made like an overstacked bet, you're going to need that team to go on a tear. And then you're probably going to have a lot of duplicated textures of players with the field. Whereas if you're a more skinny stack, there's more paths to that getting there in a unique way. Does that check out?
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. But I mean, then you're giving up the stronger stack correlation.
Right.
So it's always a give and take. The only way to tell these things is through sims or maybe math. But that makes me think, like, I wonder, it would be cool if as the draft progresses, like a draft buddy kind of thing happens where
a draft caddy
kind of happens where it's like, here's like your most likely stacking options given ADP and what's happened at every pick. It's like, that might be possible.
Well, and the other thing that I was thinking through in a spot like this, as far as being unique, is I know most people who select Justin Herbert, and the reason his ADP has gotten so high is because the Mike Allen or Mike Williams and Keenan Allen drafters at the 2-3 turn are often reaching to complete their Herbert stack. So I immediately knew not having Williams and Keenan and Herbert falling was probably going to get me kind of a unique Justin Herbert thing, and knowing that there were viable options to backdoor stack. So I think about that a lot too. And one of the benefits of being patient past ADP is like, you're probably getting a unique pairing with that quarterback once they really slide past ADP.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, obviously I think you'd rather just, I would guess that you just want the nut correlation if you can get it.
Well, no, but so my point is I didn't know I wasn't targeting Herbert. Like I drafted three wide receivers that I like better than Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. But then Herbert fell and so then I had that decision. Do I pass on Herbert because I don't have his top two partners or do I scoop him in backdoor stack knowing there's still options and it'll be unique?
I've only done like 8 drafts so far this year, but I've seen that a couple times where it's like, man, Russell Wilson is like 15, 17 slots, like, because no one wants to grab their QB yet or something.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I guess I'll take them.
And I think normally, and this is how I think through like tiebreakers and stuff, I think normally at pick 52, you know what, 8 spots pack, I don't think I grab him if I didn't use my first pick on Cooper Kupp. And it's like the Rams and Chargers play a sick LA home game in week 17. I knew I still had some easy correlation there. So it's like I use 2 tiebreakers, Herbert cheap and Kupp as my first pick to be like, all right, let's make this selection.
Yeah, I think that's all smart. And the more of those heuristics you can memorize and use throughout your draft, the better you're gonna do. Unless everything's bullshit.
I mean, everything is bullshit. But I will say, last week, if you guys missed it, we did a special stream on Friday. Was that last week? Yeah, that was last week, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, geez, time is. On Friday, so Brian and I hopped in a best ball stream. Brian has been working on this sports HUD, and one of the coolest parts about it is this thing we have decided to call the Draft Caddy. and it can basically, it's customizable however you want. If you guys watch the stream, you can see I uploaded it to include week 17 matchup, week 16 matchup, and my current exposures, which is my favorite part about it right now. And that tool is available. And I think, Brian, we're going to hopefully, if we can get the scheduling right, do another one of those next Friday where we kind of draft and can showcase the cool, but the tool. But what kind of feedback have you gotten? Because I know a lot of people have signed up for it already.
Well, pretty good. A lot of people like it. The automation's on the way. They already have it done, but it's not working good enough to release yet.
Yeah.
Hopefully in the next couple of days. And that's pretty much been the only problem, is a lot of people just don't know how to use Excel, I think, and uploading their own data and then saving as a CSV. And then we haven't done a tutorial or anything too. So they don't know where like the little icon is where you got to log in.
Yeah. Max is asking, and there's a couple questions here, and then I was just pulling it up. I'm on the clock in a slow draft, so I thought I could show you guys here. Max says, is there a version of the tool that comes preloaded? That's what you're talking about with the automations, right?
Yeah, that'll be hopefully today, maybe tomorrow, where all that info will be preloaded. Your exposures won't be preloaded in this one, but hopefully that will eventually happen. So if you want your exposures, you're just going to have to still upload a CSV for the next, whatever, hopefully week or so. But like, we're going to have a bunch of different things to upload. So like week 16 opponent, week 17 opponent. What else do we have? Like just a...
You can have your own like strength of schedule. Like say if you want to equally weight week 16 and week 17, you could kind of give your own score to those and then give a numerical number to each team.
Yeah, that's on there. Strength of schedule will be on there. Implied total, team total for week 17 is an option if you want to put that on there. And then once I get this sim good enough to where I like it, I'll put advancement rate and target rate on there too, if people want to use my stuff. Yeah. But if you have anything customizable, or if we ever get like APIs from any other site, like ETR or Osmo or whoever, if they have APIs they want to load on there, maybe we can automate that somehow for their users, something like that.
This is actually the perfect example. So this is, I've been mainly doing fast drafts. This is a Best Ball Mania slow draft where I'm on my last pick. I had even put Eno Benjamin in the queue because I'm obsessed with Eno Benjamin right now. It dovetails with our Osmo conversation where I think Eno Benjamin is going to be this year's Rashad Penny. And yet looking at the app here, I see highlighted Zamir White. I see that I only have 2% Zamir White versus 7% Eno Benjamin. I also have Derek Carr, of course, as my quarterback. That's why he's highlighting. And I only have one other Raider right now in Darren Waller. I don't have anyone on, or I do have Atlanta for that week 17, but I am going to let the app remind me. Let's take a slightly better bet here on a running back who's a little more correlated that I don't have quite as much of. So that's why I think the app I've found it like shakes me out of my complacency. Like I go to my comfort zones and then it reminds you like, Peter, you've been doing this every single time on autopilot, maybe mix it up.
Yeah. I had like 80%. What's that rookie's name? The wide receiver, Traylon Burks,
the asthma boy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I think that's probably too high, even though I've only done six drafts. Let's. And then of course he's available right when I want him. And I'm like, I'll just pass on him this time. But yeah, I mean, it all depends on what you think is useful, but you can upload whatever you want, and it works on all the other sports too. So like, I think I'm going to upload some golf. So I figure with golf, like why not upload the winning percentages from a sports book? Like in this overlay it right on, if you're going to do a golf, best ball, you don't need much more, honestly, I bet on those than what are the current odds?
Yeah.
Odds to win. Maybe top 10, something like that. Just pop that in there, and you should be able to draft pretty good best ball golf teams. I bet no one else is doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's really where it's going to come in handy for, like you said, the stuff that, or at least me specifically, know nothing about. And I'm excited about the tool, too, for – I want to get more into NBA best ball. I don't know basketball very well at all. And so I think like the tool to kind of help guide me where I don't have to do as much, you know, prep like I do with NFL stuff would be very helpful.
Definitely. So Visionary has a question we might as well answer really quick. We did just have the owner of Stochastic.com on the site. So we have to say, if you're looking for a training site, or they have tons of videos, and
we are not paid to promote Stochastic.
No, we're not.
We're not getting our beak wet or our beak wet.
And I mean, I toot my own horn here. I do have a playlist of my stuff videos I did like 2 years ago that I still think I'll hold up. If you want to go on my channel, which is my Brian Hooper 75 or Brick 75. You should easily find it if you just use Google. There's not a lot of great books, honestly. I mean, Bales ones, but they're kind of old now. No offense to Bales.
No, they are, but I tabbed through one of them within the past year. I tabbed through, and like a lot of the concepts still really hold up, like as just for a good fundamental understanding.
Yeah, you should still check them out if you haven't. And I don't know anything else. Well, I mean, Blender's got that theory of DFS. The theory of DFS.
An 18-hour masterclass. There's some good stuff out there, and I recommend hopping in the Discords too. Is honestly, like, I think getting to bad ideas around with people who have been doing this for a while is probably your like fastest on ramp, because you'll be able to get very concrete examples right out of the gate. You know, like they'll be talking about a specific slate and you'll be able to learn how to apply those concepts in real time.
I ask best ball questions like every other day in our Discord. So, and that's another reason why I like using my app, because I don't pay attention to it in the off season. I don't know who the rookies are. I don't know who's on what team. And so like that's another column I put on there, was like rookie sophomore bet. And so like, you know, that's a tiebreaker for me. Get like a maybe an undervalued rookie or a sophomore who didn't have a super great year.
Yeah.
I'm not using ADP, but I would use like ETR's ADP. I would upload that to my personal file and use their differential. But I kind of know who they like right now. So I swap that column out with my latest target scores. Yeah. But there's a lot of cool stuff you could do with it. And then obviously it's eventually baseball. There's not a ton of props and info out there, but we will have baseball pick'em overlays and prop overlays eventually. That'll be after we get this basketball figured out. And come NBA and NFL, it'll overlay for DraftKings player props and all the pick'ems, prize picks, super draft, underdog. Yep.
So, yeah, that link is down below in the show notes. I believe it's at $25 a month right now. If you have questions, you can hit up Brian in the Discord with that. But, yeah, lots of updates coming. And, you know, Holly mentions here, anything with a free agent, new team column. That's the exact kind of stuff you can do. Any of that you can add.
Yeah, you can put that in there. And if you want me to add it and automate it, like, go in our Discord, hit and tag me or DM me. And, and we'll see if it's not too hard to do.
That's a fun one. Yeah, I think that's a good one.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, you could do it almost as like rookie, free agent, trade. Like anyone who is on that isn't on the same team they were on last year, I think is kind of interesting information.
Yeah, I like sophomore, rookie, sophomore, new coordinator, vet, or blank, whatever. Yeah, okay.
All right, guys. We are going to power this down. If you haven't gotten enough best ball for today, my friend Chris Spaggs, my Splash Play co-host, is going to join us on Ship Chasing tonight. We'll probably draft a BBM3 team, continue the best ball conversation. Brian and I will not be here next Wednesday. I have a long holiday weekend, but we are going to try to schedule a stream on Friday. Brian and I are going to figure out those details right after this. So you can stay tuned from that. Anything else on your end, Brian?
And do we have our next guest booked yet after that? Or not
we
yet?
Do. Yes, we do. So the week after that, the infamous Whistles Go Woo is going to make his return to Lulz. And, you know, like I like to say, he reached out to us. You know, I figured he's a busy man. He comes to us. So I have no idea what he's cooking up, but we are going to find out.
Oh, I have an idea. Oh, I have okay. an idea.
All right. All right. Well, this is what we call a teaser in the business. Please subscribe, like PJ, the videos. Go ahead.
PJ ownership. I did. There if you go to my site, brick75.com, it's free. And I think that's it, Pete.
All right. Peace, guys.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.